thank you for being here today. This is a really special event for so many people, not only here today as part of the audience, but around the world as well. It gives me my great pleasure to introduce my mate, scientist Dr. Robert Duncan. Would you please make him welcome? So we're just going to have a discussion today, back and forward, about a major topic that's affecting the world, and I'm just going to pass this over to Robert to initiate the whole discussion and give us a little bit of background on yourself, and that'll be wonderful.
Okay. I'm not sure how much background you want, but I consider myself one of the last Renaissance scientists, last Renaissance man in the world. I've studied everything from Beethoven to Shakespeare. I went to a private school in Connecticut, and then on to Harvard on the East Coast, where I was early accepted. They allowed me to graduate in 3 years. I declined, not Harvard, but to graduate early, because there's so many great classes to still take, and my parents were paying for it. So. I worked at an artificial intelligence company. I forgot to mention, my undergrad focus was pre-medical and computer science. I decided I don't like blood of any kind, so unlike the rest of my family, I didn't become a doctor, a medical doctor. I liked robots and technology and computers. So after that, I worked for an artificial intelligence company that did image recognition of all types. And I went back to school for a master's in biomechanical engineering, robotic engineering, like artificial hearts and those types of engineering majors. And then I went to school again, a different Ivy League, and got a business degree, a master's of business administration, and then did a stint in some other work, went back for more schooling, get a PhD in artificial intelligence, but a very specific field, which is genetic algorithm optimization of artificial neural networks. So what that means is we were creating alien synthetic minds, emerging minds. And it's, when I say alien, it's not from another planet. We're just creating cybernetic minds. And there's a Dr. Wiener, and I think it was about 100 years ago when the CIA was created, that mentioned, that coined the term cybernetics, which means there is no distinction between a synthetic symbolic representation of intelligence or a biological one. In fact, they meet. You can have brain chips if you want, and it will all give rise to consciousness. And I just found that field fascinating. I did do a stint for doing management consulting for a Fortune 50 firm, and got to travel worldwide quite a bit. Anyway, when I got recruited, headhunted by DARPA, Department of Defense, CIA, and I love high-end technology, and I wasn't immoral about it. I wrote the code to track the artificial intelligence code to track the Soviet nuclear submarine fleet. That was a big project for the Navy. Worked on robotic surgery for medicine for the Army. Voice recognition, conversation planning for chatterbots, you use them all the time now. Voice of God weapons we used in war, and the Gulf War, for example.
This is a V2K.
V2K, where we can project a sound you cannot plug your ears for to stop. And we'll get into a little more about how that particular technology works. But we told them in their language, this is all a lay down your arms. And it worked quite effectively because the technology is unexplainable to the common person who hasn't experienced it yet. And then I saw in society a lot of my work being misused on my own population. I'm like, that's exactly what I worked on, the things Craig's experiencing. And this was not supposed to be used on civilians. This was supposed to be a wartime weapon used for interrogation purposes, perhaps to maybe fatigue the enemy and demoralize them, which you can understand the Department of Defense would be quite interested in this. Wars without blood, I mean, that's wonderful. Being misused completely. I started my own investigation about 22 years ago. I became a human rights activist against torture, all forms of torture, but mainly this kind of torture that Craig will talk about, what's happened to him and people all around the world. This wasn't the way it was supposed to be, and so my agenda since then has been to enlighten people, to educate them. I've gone to the Senate Intelligence Committee, met with 23 senators in the United States, federal, with the head of the LA FBI, and to our dismay, our words fell on deaf ears of what was happening. No one understood the technology or even believed it existed. And these are our leaders. We met with the Senate Intelligence Committee behind closed doors and, you know, frisked for wires and bugs. They had never heard of MKUltra, which they're the oversight committee of our intelligence agencies. And we had a huge hearing in the 1970s called the Frank Church hearings. A senator from my state of Idaho, but I know most people don't know where Idaho is. And it was very famous, and turns out the CIA was doing all this mind control testing on humans in Canada and the United States, just some various things. And they end up shredding about 70,000 documents. So that kind of led me forward to write some books that I did and do events like this, just to educate the world. This is happening. It's probably ramping up. If you know someone, educate them, because the shock and awe of becoming a target, not knowing how it all works and what to expect, is horrifying. And I kind of promised Craig I wouldn't get into how evil it is. It is condensed evil. That's my introduction.
Thanks, Robert. So we've talked about a variety of things since Robert arrived on Wednesday. He looked really great when he came through customs and immigration. He stood there by himself, and we hadn't met before, but we've been on numerous conferences and radios and panels talking about this issue, because I'm one of the targeted individuals from this. I lived in the United States for 28 years. So when do you think this mind control started? Because there are discussions about post-World War II, what happened with the paperclip, was it Project Paperclip?
So after World War II, the Russians, the winners of the World War II and the United States, along with Britain and others, decided to divide all the German scientists and forgive them of their war crimes. And what we hear about are the ones that end up building in NASA, we're building intercontinental ballistic missiles, or the missile scientists. But half of them were mind scientists, and they were about psychological warfare of how to socially engineer the world under one world control. We don't hear about those, but they're very much in the, you know, in the influence of every political party in the world.
Mm. Yeah, so I know there are numerous scientists who came over, instead of going to the Nuremberg trials and being hanged, the US government said, you tell us everything you know about mind control because you've been using children in the concentration camps. And the US received some of these scientists and some went to Russia, and it's escalated from that period.
A new arms race began, and this is for the very soul of man, the cognitive warfare.
Mm.
It's funny, we think nuclear weapons, that's what we need to worry about. And that we do, I mean, absolutely, that would annihilate all civilization. But you're one step ahead if you can control the minds of those with their fingers on the nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the idea, as well as you can shape cultures, not just through your normal propaganda methods of television, radio, et cetera. This is direct neural interfacing wirelessly while you're sleeping, programming your dreams, making associations that are not your self-autonomous entity.
Mm.
And this is a conversation the human race has to have, every government has to have. Mm. And this is why I at least talk about it, is to get more people interested in before it's too late. And it may be too late, but...
We know that the weapons were created during the Iraq War, as an example, to tell the Iraqi troops when they were retreating. You can basically talk into a microphone, and that can radiate out to a couple of miles, 2 or 3 miles, and they use that to tell the Iraqi forces that this is the voice of Allah, put your weapons down.
There are two technologies. Voice of God is a broad categorization of both audio techniques, and one's called LRAD, long range acoustical device, which again can go for a long distance. No speaker can do that. You know, it's a type of acoustical array. And then there's the microwave hearing effect. Dr. Frey first invented it, and there's a Dr. Lin in the University of Chicago that has also done work on it. And this is a strange effect, that if microwaves or high-frequency radio waves and interact with the brain, it heats it slightly, and then it cools, heats it slightly. And this is done in the extremely low frequency range, and humans can hear voices clicking, music can be piped into it with different levels of sensitivity. Mm-hmm. And it depends on the power range window. And that's one type of voice of God weapon. It often, the Army calls it